Welcome to the newest episode of Walnut Grovecast. I've been recording episodes of Walnut Grovecast for nearly 4 years, and as we approach our 100th episode, I can't help but look back and cherish the moments that have meant so much to me. When I launched the Patreon campaign about a year ago, I didn't know if anybody would support this little show about Little House on the Prairie. But to my surprise, many have, and with their continued support, it allows me to not only continue releasing episodes, which are now permanently weekly, by the way, but also create small items like stickers and stuff like that. Most of you have gotten back to me about your favorite character. It is all for something that I'm working on. I think you will enjoy what shows up on your doorstep very soon. I would like to thank the following supporters for their continuous support. And if I get anyone's name wrong, please send me an email or hit me up on Facebook. I would really appreciate knowing how to pronounce your last name or first name. Suzanne Holland, Spunky Cheek, Leah Mitchell, Laura Solarin, Kim and Jack Lair, Dana Wilkins, Chantel Dubois-Nishiyama, Christopher Hassler, Matt Mercier, Peyton England, Stacy Keller, Aaron Wortman, Angela Bowen, Ann Quinn, Dottie Cashin, Dean Butler, Gerald Lang, Ginny Comer, Jeannie Schneider-Mitchell, I hope you're feeling better, Jeannie, by the way, Jeff Griffin, Laura Furman, Megan Parker, Melissa Gilbert, The No Agenda Podcast, Rebecca Harris, Sherry Benner, Susan King, Teresa Trapp, Valerie Williams, Whitney, Brian S., Bobby Young, Brenda Worsley, Chris Cooling from the Forgotten.tv podcast, Don Roberts, and Max Duration. Thank you again for your support, and I look forward to making many, many more episodes. If you would like to support Walnut Grovecast, please visit patreon.com/walnutgrovecast. Without further delay, please enjoy the newest episode of Walnut Grovecast. Walnut Grove is a place to be. If you live in 1863, Walnut Grove is a place to be. If you live in 1863, we never come to meet his family. I was homeless. Welcome to Walnut Grovecast. My name is Mark, and I am on tonight with Kim Lair. How are you, Kim?
Oh, I'm great. Thanks. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you. This is a movie I prepared to record with you roughly 4 months ago.
And, yes, this is our second shot.
It was the beginning of me completely losing my mind and forgetting schedules and all this stuff, and I just completely watched the wrong movie.
The wrong episode.
And I forget what it was that we were going to review, but I think we put it off for either one or two nights, and I just watched it, and it was good. It was fine. I don't remember what episode that was.
Yeah, we were supposed to watch The Legend of Black Jake.
Right.
And so came prepared with The Legend of Black Jake, and you came with Barn Burner, and when we started recording, I said, this is the funniest episode I've ever seen of Little House on the Prairie, and you thought that I needed help.
I wonder, did we actually start recording?
I don't remember if we started recording or not. I don't know how far we got into that, but I remember it was like, well, I guess we'll try this again next week.
You know, I would love that if we actually started recording. If I'm going to just look and see if there's any remnant of that. Yeah, that's pretty funny. So, Barn Burner, we're reviewing this time around. Do you want to talk about the release of Barn Burner and when did it hit the market?
This is season 5, episode 20, which was released February 19th, 1979.
Nice. I was 6.
Oh, yes. I was negative 10.
You still to come.
Yeah, exactly.
You're like, you know what? One day.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe like four kids later, there'll be one.
Nice. But this is, it's a very interesting episode. It's a very racially charged episode.
Oh, boy.
There's a lot of stuff that we have to discuss in this movie. I mean, this episode, because it's just crazy. I think I'm just going to go to the first clip here that I have, which is basically sets us up to kind of what's going on with the town. We're all in front of Hanson Lumber, and all the farmers are talking about the grain. Is it grain? I forget what they're selling. Corn?
Yeah, it's wheat.
Wheat, grain, corn. They sell they basically grow everything in Walnut Grove.
Yeah, this is definitely wheat, though.
Yeah.
Wheat and apples, eventually apples.
Yeah, too many apples.
Mm-hmm.
Here we go. Oh, whoops.
Now, there ain't no two ways about it. They're going to have to buy our wheat, and they're going to have to pay our price for it.
Suppose they go elsewhere as we get it cheaper.
You know, they wind up paying more than the difference in freight charges.
Joe's right. We're closest to the mills in Sleepy Eye.
Is that Joe Kagan?
No, is Joe Kagan.
So we see Joe Kagan. You know, we have Joe Kagan, who's a famous boxer, as a part of the township now. He's right there alongside of all of his other fellow farmers.
And he's got a crop.
Yeah, I think it's awesome, actually.
I do, too, but it was interesting because I noticed that he was billed as only Kagan, not Joe Kagan, which was just odd.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, it was kind of weird.
They're going to have to deal with us. Price is high, but it's fair.
We just got to make sure that we all stick together in this thing.
Well, I don't know. Maybe we should back off a little bit.
Hold on. You remember the last bumper crop of wheat we had? You want that to happen again?
Sure don't.
Wait.
It's just so funny. The bumper crop. But it's just the guy is so like shut down by Jonathan.
Matt.
It's like, all right. I guess you're right. Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. I hate to admit it.
But Larrabee's there. He has a little a grimace on his face, and I don't know. He's about to open his mouth.
Yeah, I remember it. They made you take less than half of what your crop was worth. Some of the smaller farmers here are told, take it or leave it. It
wasn't worth the growing for what I settled for.
Well, I don't know how the rest of you feel, but I'd just soon burn my whole crop as sell as cheap as I did last time.
What?
All right, then. We learned a lesson. Doesn't make any sense for us to deal with them one at a time. We all stick together, we all come out on top.
There might be just one thing wrong in that.
What do you mean?
I got the biggest crop, I got the most to lose. Why should I stick my neck out so some ex-slave make the same money as I do?
Now, don't get started with that again, Larrabee. You think Joe Kagan's the only one gets hurt if we don't stick together on this thing? We all get hurt, including the both of you.
It's pretty much up to you, Larrabee. We're all agreed.
Now, if you're wondering, all that in the background is the water wheel, what do they call that thing?
I don't know. Well, I've only heard of it as the water wheel.
Well, it's the it's the big spinning wheel, so that it generates energy for the saw.
Mm-hmm.
It's the worst audio of all time, which is really kind of like holy cow. Sometimes Little House on the Prairie just. I don't know if they're covering up problems with the regular audio and they're trying to just kind of salvage it, but it is so noisy. I don't know. I found it very difficult to hear them. And I watched a couple different versions. So.
I do too. No, I do too. And I watch with subtitles and stuff, but
that's interesting. Wait, now if you watch with subtitles, they always accurate?
No.
Okay. Because no, I always picture like a 19-year-old girl in between like midterm typing these things up.
Like, yeah, really I kind of give it to them. I would say it's like 95% accurate. Pretty good.
Okay.
But not only is the audio reprehensible, but the message behind it is quite ridiculous. But my question was, is Kagan an ex-slave? I don't remember that.
I think it's more of a stereotypical thing. Like, you're black, you must have been a slave.
Well, that's not cool.
Oh, well, I think that might be the nicest thing the guy said in the episode.
Yeah, you're not wrong. We're going to get rough.
Kagan's the kind of guy, not Kagan, Kagan, Kagan's like a no nonsense kind of guy. So it's like, he's, you know, constantly like, I'm going to like knock this guy out. But Larrabee's like this. I don't know. He's just a loudmouth and getting in your face and loves to make a comment.
Like I've said before when talking with you that I live for the drama Little House episodes. I love like to cry when I'm watching Little House. This episode, I was like putting off watching for so long, even multiple times watching it for this episode, I was putting it off because it was so negative. And I don't mean that in like a, it's sad kind of way, but it was so hate filled and like angry that I don't like finding myself in that kind of headspace. And even just like watching this man just clinging to his anger for everything it's worth, like just was a bummer. I didn't want to be around it. It was crazy.
Yeah. And he's, and it goes throughout the entire episode.
Mm-hmm.
But all in all, it's a very funny episode. I'm kidding.
Okay.
There's no, really not, no humor in this episode except for the time where Nels is holding a gun through a window. No, I had to laugh. Richard Ball holding a shotgun at somebody.
And while his wife and kids cower. But there's, you know what else there's none of in this is there's no Laura.
None?
She's seen it, but never heard.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, there's no Laura. There's no Albert. There's no Carrie. But the three of them, when the, you know, the Garveys go to Ma and Pa's, they're up in the loft. And then when they're in school, they're sitting there. But then class is dismissed and they just walk right out.
It's quite a lot of Andy.
Oh, a whole lot of Andy. And I think he pulled it off.
Yeah, I think so, too. There's even a moment where, and we'll get to it, where he's crying. And he really looks like he's crying.
And he sounds like he's crying, too. Yeah. Like, gutturally. He's like, ugh! And it just, I just wanted to hug him. I'm Team Andy.
Yeah, no, he, I like him a lot. And
me too.
These, let's see, there are a few more comments I was just going to play of Larrabee and how he's trying to get under Joe Kagan's skin and kind of failing.
All right, then. We're all in agreement, huh?
Agreed.
All right, meeting adjourned.
Free or not, looks like the white folks still have to take care of you, don't it, boy?
So Kagan's just laughing him off, which is a good response because, I mean, unless you're going to get into a fight with the guy, what else can you really do?
Yeah, and that's going to be the best way to get under Larrabee's skin.
Right. So Larrabee, I'm just going to, it goes around a little bit, but essentially there's somebody going around and they're trying to buy up the wheat at a lower price.
And apparently this was a big issue in 1879, which if we're doing our 100 years rule would be during this time. Apparently the crop of wheat, it was going for 80 cents a bushel, or I don't know what the measurement was, but it dropped down to 20 cents.
Oh, really? So
yeah.
So like a 75% drop.
Right. And people were freaking out about it. Like it was a big deal. So this is actually pretty relevant to the time it's supposed to be talking about.
Oh, it's about time. It's nice to see that.
Yeah.
But that's incredible. I guess they had such a robust crop that everyone just grew so much of it.
Yeah, this says that there was drought and wind producing dust storms, but I don't know what that has to do with much wheat. It sounds like the opposite, but
like, have you ever heard how, you know, vegetables of course have changed over the years, with, you know, different hybrids and kind of making some grow larger. And from what I understand, corn, for instance, corn used to be a lot smaller back in the 19th century. Do you know anything about if wheat had changed over the period of time?
I know nothing about wheat.
Okay. I'm neither. I know nothing either. I was just kind of curious because, yeah, I mean, I'm sure on some level they were able to get rid of the part of the wheat that's wasteful, you know, that you would chuck after doing whatever you do to get the wheat to be usable.
Well, I know that in the books, after Pa thrashes all the wheat and gets all the berries, I think, out of it, that's what they're called, at least, is the mm-hmm. wheat berries, is that he would go bring the stalks to Ma, who would make straw hats for them all.
Huh. Like 600 of them.
Yeah, well, she'd sell them. She'd make, like, two for Pa's work days, you know, one for church, one for her, one for Mary, one for Laura. So, you know, they use it up pretty fast.
Well, that's kind of cool, though.
And yeah, I love that, just like no waste. We have to use everything.
Yeah, and making baskets to carry eggs.
Yeah, double yolks.
Be nice if they kind of weave together a nice, I don't know, 8x8 piece and put it on that wall next to Carrie's bed. That would have been nice.
Yeah, help keep the flies out, at least.
Exactly. At least a draft. When it rains, it's like, oh, I'm all wet. It's all right. It's all right. Just ignore her. Poor Carrie. So he's going around and he's basically trying to buy the wheat really cheaply. And he gets to Larrabee. And Larrabee has an overabundance of apples. And apples were plentiful. So he basically, I mean, he did what kind of a shrewd business person would do. I'm not saying it's right. But, you know, yeah. This is why unions are kind of difficult. Because it's like, it's all or nothing.
Yeah.
But no, you're a farmer. I don't know.
I said the same exact thing. You gave your word at the meeting and stuff, so that's not really cool to go back on. But that makes the most sense. He had the most to lose, and he was like, what am I going to do with all this stuff if I can't sell it? I'm going to sell it. I have a family to feed.
And on top of it, he wanted to move the other produce. So he basically sold the apples for a ridiculously low price. And yeah. Gave him a deal on the wheat just to move it all.
They said later on that the wheat plus the apples was less than he would have made if they had all stuck together on the, like, quote unquote union deal.
Right. Yeah. It was one of those kind of questionable things, but it doesn't take a lot of weird stuff is about to happen. So once word gets to Jonathan that he had made this deal and basically screwed everything up, Jonathan just basically, he just freaks out. So I'm just going to play that clip.
If you could just come down a little.
This is that part. You know what? I'm going to play this because he talks about the lowering of the price with the new purchaser.
I'd be here in the morning to freight it away and put the cash right in your hand.
I said my piece, Mr. Bates.
Well, I'm not authorized to accept a price that high. I'll have to go back and see what the company has to say.
Well, you do what you gotta do. Of course, I could give you a bargain on apples.
Apples?
I got another barn full of them.
Well, who doesn't? In a couple of months, nobody in the county is going to want to stare another apple pie in the face. Why, even the pigs would be turning the backs on them for feed.
That's flat out insulting, right?
For feed!
Apples. Apples are delicious.
Well,
what? Oh, sorry. I was going to say, how are you preserving them, you know?
I guess you make jam?
Yeah.
What else can you really make? Applesauce, apple jam?
I just don't know how well it would keep without refrigeration and all that.
Yeah. I mean, once you pick them, what do you have, like, a week? Maybe at best? I'm not really sure.
Yeah, clock's ticking.
The only reason I brought up the apples is if you could see your way to buy them at a modest price. I just might be persuaded to give a little on the wheat.
How much is a little?
Enough to make it worth your while.
And they're cracking up. So we find out that this happened. Jonathan, of course, he's always has a short fuse, right?
Yeah, he does, I guess. But, you know, he was the one kind of running the union meeting.
I'm the boss. You have to listen to me. Jeez.
Larry!
This is Larrabee. I need to see your husband.
Well, I don't know if...
Let him in. Well?
Larrabee's sitting at his table. Not a bad house either.
No.
But he has one of those stereoscopes. I forget the exact name of them.
He was just sitting at the table like a boss looking at a stereoscope, which caught me off guard.
Oh, yeah. It's like, what's he doing?
But I just didn't expect it. And like, he's playing with his kids' toys while his kids are doing homework. And speaking of kids, those children are so young for him and his wife. I actually looked up the age difference between the actors. And for the father and son, there's a 51-year age difference.
So he was 51 when they were born, supposedly?
When the first one was born. And she would have been like 48, I think.
Wow, it was, 1870s.
Yeah, I guess. But, oh my God, they're, the little one looks like he's probably in third grade.
The stereo, have you ever looked at those old stereoscopes? And I don't know if that's the exact name.
I've looked at it, actually, in the Sears catalog.
Get out of here. I have one right here.
I know you do. And I found it was for $4.25 for like all the bells and whistles and two slides and a holder and everything. But that's about $110 nowadays.
That's pretty impressive. Yeah.
Yeah. He's got some money. His house was very nice. He had a big old barn. He's got the biggest crop.
Yeah. He's got a tablecloth.
Yeah.
Actually, he has a dining room table and this little, I guess, serving table. Not really a serving table, but an entranceway table. I'm not really sure what you call this.
It's Dad's getting drunk at table.
Well, that's what he does use it for. Larrabee. I'll tell you the rest of this. He also has a crazy chandelier over the table that it's not really a chandelier so much as it is a huge lantern of some sort. Not sure what that is.
Interesting.
I don't expect your wife and boys are going to want to hear what I got to say, Larrabee.
I don't expect anybody cares what you got to say, Garvey. Speak your piece.
He's got a good comeback. I'll say that.
You gave your word about holding together on this.
That's too bad. I wasn't taking any foolish chances. He gave me a price on a barn full of worthless apples. I took it. Lowered the price on my wheat.
Why, you knew he had to take our price.
I didn't know anything of the sort. Besides, there ain't no nigger gonna make the same profit as me.
Hold on. This is rated R.
Mm-hmm. And that is the first of three that we will get in this episode.
They're flying in this.
Mm-hmm.
And it really rolls off the tongue with Larrabee. he really seems to like saying the word. And
yeah.
You know a little bit about this, but I did uncover a little bit of the films that he was in, but he was in two other films that had to do with, at least two other films that had to do with race.
Right. And I think you're putting that very gently. And a look at the IMDb page will have similar language to this episode, but.
Well, I'm not going to say it because I'm just, it is the boss N-word, where he plays a doctor in 1974, and he was in a movie about the KKK.
Now, what you might also know him from, if not from those two, is he is Red Ryder.
Oh.
Wait, yeah, Red the Ryder. Original Red Ryder from the comic books. He was in the first movie in the 1940s, which is why
his... Oh, my God. Wow.
Yeah, and his name is Don Red Berry, like Red's his nickname because of Red Ryder.
Holy cow, that's amazing.
Apparently, he kind of got an ego working there and was kind of a jerk, maybe, according to some. And his roles kind of started dwindling because nobody wanted to work with him. And when he was 80 years old, his wife, he had ridiculously young children, so I shouldn't be surprised. He had like a 10-year-old and a 15-year-old, and his wife was just getting a divorce, so she takes the kids together, and she goes to drive off, and he runs after them with a gun. When he's 80 years old, the cops come because it's a domestic violence situation, and he just holds the gun up to his own head and he pulls the trigger.
Seriously? And wow.
That is a wrap on the actor who played Larrabee. And that was actually a year after this episode aired.
Now, wait. So, but he wasn't 80. He died at the age of 68.
Oh, why did I have 80 in my head?
Well, it was 1980. So maybe that's why.
Yeah, I'm sure that was it. Okay. So, but still a 10-year-old and a 15-year-old.
No. It's crazy. It's just, holy cow. That stuff like that is always so tragic to me. somebody who's had this. I mean, if you go to his IMDb page, I mean, I don't even know how many things he's been in here. Yeah. I don't know if they 255 acting credits.
Mm-hmm.
That's insane. Wow,
and
that's
big ones,
really
too. Nothing to sneeze at. Red Ryder, that's a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming is that based off of the Red Ryder BB gun? I mean,
yeah,
I wonder if that's the tie-in.
Yeah, I think the Red Ryder BB gun is based off Red Ryder, but it was like a comic in the 30s and in the 40s. It was a series of movies, so it's very Christmas story.
Now, I wonder if there's a connection there with maybe Michael Landon, because you know he is so associated with Westerns and the people, and you know, the guy was a bit more of a legend than maybe we realized in the before you did your research, which I thank you for.
Oh yes, of course.
But yeah, I mean, he was also in Project UFO, so which I don't know if you've ever seen, but it's it's one of those kind of weird type of UFO shows. He was in a lot of things.
Yeah, spanning back to like the very early 30s.
You know, in it's kind of interesting, though. Here he was in Little House on the Prairie. He did at least another 10 things up into his death.
Wow.
Including Knott's Landing.
Hmm.
But yeah, Undercover with the KKK played Ben Wright. And I'm not really sure who he played or what that movie was really about. But I have to wonder. You know, I'm kind of interested to see what if this guy kind of had that. Was he known maybe as a racist? You know, not a real racist, but as like you would play a, you know, a good racist.
Yeah, I don't know. Some people get stereotyped. He pulled it off very convincingly, so.
Hmm. And he was also in, wow, look at that, 4 episodes of Batman, the TV series from 1966.
Oh, hey.
And yeah, the guy definitely made his mark. Mm. But it's unfortunate. It's a terrible end.
Yeah.
Terrible story. Yeah. All right, so I'm going to go to him having a drink here. But, oh, no, well, actually, I'm going to go where we're talking about everybody really being kind of pissed off about what Larrabee had done.
I never talked to a man like that in my life. I don't know what come over me.
I'm not letting it eat at you. I'm not sure I wouldn't have done the same thing myself.
Well, I don't care one bit. I had such plans for that money.
That's Alice. And what plans do you think they have?
Oh, my gosh.
A phone?
I don't know. Maybe some, like, lamp cleaning oil. That was the filthiest, sootiest lap I've ever seen in my life.
It was. It really kind of was. But what about, like, if they didn't have this extra money, maybe, because, well, I don't want to get too forward, but if they didn't have extra money at some point, they wouldn't have had to buy the phone. And then her past wouldn't have come out to bite her in the butt.
Well, it's interesting. I know that we've been like sidetrack nation here, but I was noticing that they seem to kind of have a little bit of money in this episode. Alice has like a very fancy store-bought hat with like structural integrity. It's velvet. It has like ornamental ribbons on it, not just for necessity, but like for fashion.
Yeah.
And Andy has like a very nice store-bought hat. So just saying, they seem to be throwing that money around, but they have less mouths to feed than the Ingalls. So.
And Alice's coat as well is kind of nice.
I didn't notice.
Well, it's freeze frame, so I'm just kind of looking. So, yeah. I mean, meanwhile, the Ingalls have their, you know, one window. They don't even have a picture window. It's, you know, and they're just scraping and saving, making potato sack dresses. Oh, geez. Poor Ingalls.
Yeah.
Ain't much left to do now except sell for what we can get. Forget about it.
So, back at Larrabee's little castle... His poor wife, who seems so nice.
Yes.
Adele. Adele seems very, very typical for the time, maybe, what we would think of as a wife. Like, just very soft-spoken, very to herself. I'm going to stand by my man, even if I disagree with him.
Exactly.
And, yeah, and she seems very sweet. And she definitely grows a pair later on in the episode, thankfully.
Oh, yeah.
So he's pacing around. He's having some type of hooch.
Yeah, some kind of dark liquor. And he's just kind of like gassing himself up, being like, oh, how dare Jonathan come in here and talk to me like that in front of my kids.
They have a rug, too. I don't know if you noticed
that. Oh, money bag.
Seriously, how much was a rug back in
there? You have the catalog. Tell us.
I'm going to look it up in the Montgomery Ward one, though.
Oh.
The other book I got. But I'm going to look it up as this place.
You're not going to get away with it. And that's that. Ain't nobody going to talk to me like that.
Doug, please.
Shaming me. Shaming me in front of my own family.
Nice crystal decanter.
Well, you can't hardly blame him for being upset.
Now you're taking his side.
Oh, I'm not taking his side.
I'm going to settle this once and for all.
Oh, no, Judd, don't do it. Oh, please. No, Judd, don't do
it.
Out
of my way, Adele.
Judd! Judd!
So he grabs his shotgun and he runs out the door. Because, you know, what could go wrong, I guess, right? It's, You just had, like, you know, a couple pints of whiskey. He's going to jump, you know, head on over there and give this man a little bit of a talking to. So we get to the house and we see one of, as you said, I didn't notice it before, the soot-laden, what do you call it, the lantern.
Mm-hmm.
And Andy's being a good boy. He's doing his homework or something like that.
Exactly.
I guess this is at the same exact time. So they're over at the Ingalls house complaining about everything. And they're like, you stay here, boy. And Larrabee kind of charges in.
I'm here to see your paw boy.
He's not here.
Where is he? Don't lie to me.
I'm not lying to you.
You're lying.
Larrabee accidentally, I say accidentally, I think it's a controversial word. In his drunken stupor, he takes a swing at the boy, knocking him out, knocking him to the floor and cutting his head. I only see towels. I have to look through the catalog and find rugs. I'm like looking through, but I haven't been able to find it. So, yeah, he knocks him to the floor, and I thought he was dead at first. I mean, then I'm thinking, he's still in the show.
He's not moving at all. So Larrabee kind of, like, pushes him. So he pushes him, he falls, hits his head on, like, a hope chest.
like a sack of potatoes he goes down.
Yeah, he kind of, like, he's like, boy, what's wrong with you? And he kind of, like, pulls him back to see, and just blood is, like, gushing out of little Andy's head.
And he wobbles his way up, and he grabs the lantern and walks out because, again, let's talk about Jonathan's family's wealth. They have they have more than one horse, you know, that they use for just riding around.
Well, so first, Larrabee, like, pieces out. Mm-hmm. Once he realizes that Andy's hurt. But also, speaking of their wealth, like, they missed a lantern completely. It was gone, and they didn't even notice it. They just had a new, nice, shiny one the next day at dinner.
poor. I mean, they definitely were rolling in the dough. Ordering maybe on credit, maybe.
Probably.
So, Andy, you know, and he kind of gets up really quickly, and I don't know. I guess he was going for help. Right, for himself.
Well, he was going to warn his dad that Larrabee is pissed at him and he's got a shotgun.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the first thing that comes out of his mouth when he does meet his dad. You know, his mom and dad are on the way home from the Ingalls in a carriage, and Andy's just on a horse. But he's trying to see, so he takes the lantern out there and kind of puts it up on this lamp, like on a fence post, while he's hitching up the horse.
Right. Well, here's Andy running into his parents.
He's after Pa. He's got a shot.
Whoops, I'm sorry.
Pa! Pa!
Andy, what is it? What's wrong?
It's Mr. Larrabee. He's after Pa. He's got a shotgun. He's bad.
He did that to you, boy?
Yes, sir.
You ride with your Ma.
When he says yes, sir, those are tears.
I know. Poor guy.
I'll take your horse.
Jonathan, you come with me.
No, I'll be back soon.
By the way, Jonathan picks him up like he's a feather.
I know. He picks him up from the horse while Jonathan's in like a crouched position and puts him in the back. And I have to say, I talk a lot about Michael Landon's hotness, but every woman I have talked to is all about Jonathan Garvey.
I want Jonathan Garvey to pick me up. Give me a hug, you know?
Oh, my God.
The guy's so, like, huge. Like, I don't know. Yeah.
I looked it up. He was 6'5", 270 pounds.
Wow. But, I mean, yeah. Total gentle giant. At least that was what, that's the way I'll always think of him.
Yeah, me too.
Especially with those flower commercials that he did.
FTD Flowers.
Yeah. Is that what it was? What was it? TD Flowers? Something like that.
It's like FTD.
Yeah. FTD. What a weird name. But yeah, I really remember those. He always had like a brown suit on. Like, yeah, it's Father Murphy.
Got a shotgun.
I don't care.
Well, I do. You've got us to think about too.
Those are nice ribbons on her.
Yeah.
Hat,
and they,
whatever.
They don't serve just a tying purpose. Like, there's some ruffling going up by the ears that are just for looking pretty.
Oh, Alice Garvey, you have a past.
All right, let's get the boy.
So they get they see the barn. The barn's on fire. Now, as a casual watcher of the show, we don't know what caused this fire, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think it's as obvious as it turns out to be. We've given a couple of hints.
Yeah, I think it's purposely a little murky.
We missed a little scene we've missed where it falls over.
Yeah, they don't show that at all.
That's what was needed. I don't, 2 seconds. It would've...
Yeah, but I think we're supposed to feel murky about it. I feel like we're on the jury. Like, it's an episode of Law and Order or something. I feel like we're not supposed to know if Larrabee did it or not.
So, I guess. So, yeah, the place is on fire. It's got the music and it's crazy. There's not enough water on Earth to put that fire out. And all of his grain is in there and probably smells like toast or something. We get back to the mercantile. Word spread very quickly about this, right?
And yeah, they're gathering up a posse.
We have badass Nels. Holy moly.
I was like a little into Nels this episode. I was like, you go, Nels. And Harriet is like pawing at him like, Nels, don't go, don't go. And Nels like, stand back, woman. I was like, Nels, who are you?
Yeah, it's like, what the heck? Here's that scene and you have Harriet like, come home to me smelling like toast.
Nels, listen to me. Now listen to me.
Look out.
You just listen to me. What if you get shot?
Let's go.
What? No, Nels. You do have a wife and a family to consider.
Hurry, let's go to bed.
Nels, listen to me.
Laying the law down.
Yeah, so they go to Larrabee's house, and they're banging on the door. So here we go. It's like a lynching party or something, like.
Oh, yeah. Oh, they are mad. Yeah.
Well, I guess this is the way you would do it, you know, in a small kind of township like this. You know, you don't have. I mean, I would imagine, you know, Pa should be the sheriff, right?
Yeah. I would watch that show, no doubt.
Jonathan would be, you know, the other guy. There's the sheriff and then there's the
deputy.
Yes.
Larrabee! Larrabee, open up!
What?
Stay put, I'll handle this. You clear off of my property, all of you!
You're only gonna make things worse by resisting.
I'm gonna make things a lot worse if you don't clear off my property.
You open that door, Larrabee, we're gonna knock it down.
It's your own fault that your boy got hurt. Now you clear off my property unless you want to get your head blown off.
Put the gun down, Larrabee.
So just sneaking out the window, right? It's like the window's just wide open and you have Nels there who's just pointing literally a 12-gauge double barrel shotgun at him.
Yeah.
And he's ready. He's got his finger on the trigger. Like, I mean, that's not very safe.
No.
Or,
and afterwards, like a true gentleman, I'm telling you, I'm into Nelson's episode, but like a true gentleman, he goes up to the wife and sons and is like, I'm sorry for what I had to do.
Yeah.
Real slow. If anybody's going to get hurt, it's going to be you.
What a threat.
Now put it down slow.
I feel like Nels has killed men before.
Oh, yeah.
What's going on? What do all these men want?
It's like you have Richie Cunningham and his like brother that got thrown off. Chuck. I don't know if you ever watched The Happy Days.
Mm-mm.
Richie Cunningham had a brother in the first season, Chuck.
Oh,
then he goes off to college and we never hear from him again. 10 seasons later, we still have yet to hear from him.
Unlock the door. It's all right out there.
Now this, if you listen closely, Jonathan's right there. He grabs him right by the neck. And Jonathan has a lot of reasons to be mad at him. But it really, I think it was well chosen why he's mostly mad. So
You beat him up, let go!
So he's after him because of the son, not because he burned, you know, his entire livelihood down.
That's good.
Yeah, it's like one of these like little things that easily could have been, you know, kind of like, you burned down my farm. It's like, well, what about your kid who needs some stitches? You
know? Yeah, I didn't even notice that, but that's nice to hear that Jonathan's worried about his son. And, like, he doesn't know that it was, like, a push and he hit his head. He thinks that he got roughed up.
Yeah. Well, exactly. Klutzy Andy.
Pick a judge, handle it.
And Nels actually comes in through the window. It's awesome. He's like, let me just kind of step in over the windowsill right here.
He's so tall and slender.
Yeah, he's wearing one of these kind of special suits that, you know, has all these like nice stitches. It's very, I bet it's right out of the Sears but Roebuck catalog.
Probably.
We'll lock him in the ice house until the judge gets here Thursday.
Let's go.
You have King in there who's like, let's go. But yeah, I'll play Smells.
I'm sorry.
And they're just left behind, like, looking like, oh my God. They just took Pa.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
That's traumatizing.
Yeah, I would say, yeah, definitely. So let's see, there's.
So Larrabee's off to the ice house.
I was going to play the Doc Baker advice.
Oh.
Off your head, son.
Now, you know, his head got hit pretty bad, and now he has this huge bandana. Well, not a bandana, but a huge, like, wrap of gauze.
Mm-hmm.
I guess from Doc Baker.
I think you'd best stay home from school today.
Oh, no. Doc Baker says not to worry about it.
This just, I don't know. I want to question this. You know, it's head trauma. You know? Doc's like, you can go to school.
Yeah, maybe hop on the carriage and just get it all jostled around in there.
Exactly. It's like, refill my glass, okay? Go to the ice house and get me some ice for my scotch. But I just thought it was kind of funny. It's like, just very like, it's no big deal. Don't take a day off from school. We're just looking at ashes, actually, in this little scene. But, so, yeah, he's going to go to class, and I think that's a pretty good move. So.
Will you all please read chapters 4 and 5?
And Alice is the teacher, so I think that is also kind of, like, crazy to think about. I mean, she just had a really crazy evening.
Yeah, well, they got to live that two-income life hats.
Take a day, I guess. I don't know. Well, I think they would understand.
I think so, too. But in the ashes, there is a broken, sooty old lantern.
That's right. Sorry. Yep.
No worries. So just interesting. And he kind of remembers that he put the lantern up on the fence post. So he's like, oh, maybe this wasn't Larrabee. I don't know. So they're not going to have class for the next few days in school because they are having a trial.
Yes. Which is kind of crazy. You know, we're going to actually have a judge come in. Mm-hmm. And this judge was actually in another episode.
He looked familiar.
I just lost my little thing here. But it was played by Jeff Corey. And let's see. I think he might have been a judge in another episode. Sorry. Yeah. Well, no, he was in Blind Justice. He played Edgar Mills in that episode. So no, he was not. But, you know, I always like it when we have repeat performers.
Yeah, me too.
So here's the rest of this little class.
And be prepared for a written examination on Friday or Monday. There will be no class tomorrow and maybe Friday because of the town business that's to be conducted here. I hope you all take advantage of this free time to study. Class dismissed.
And even Larrabee's kids are like, he's sent to school.
Yeah.
It's like, you go to school. Jeez, it's very tense, very tense. But yeah, we do get to see Laura here. She's like 6 feet tall. You can't really miss her. And there's a little bit of a, I'm not going to say bullying, but a little bit of,
a little bit. Yeah, I would say bullying.
Okay. So.
Hey, why don't you leave me alone?
What's the matter? Worried about your pa?
Mind your own business.
Listen to him. Hey, your pa's really going to get it tomorrow.
Todd.
I forgot about this link, actually. I was thinking of a different one. But yeah, this is the bullying one. Sorry. Because I wrote Weird Prayer, and that's a different thing.
Oh, yeah, I know what it is.
Leave him alone.
Why should I?
Because I said so. Now go on home.
Hey, what's the matter with you? You already got your head cracked open by his paw. So what are you sticking up for him for?
And no Albert, right? I mean, did you mention that before?
Yeah, no Albert. You just see him, but you don't hear him. He's up in the loft with Carrie and Laura, and he's actually sitting next to Andy when they're in school, but they don't say anything.
So strange.
Yeah.
Because I feel like it. Now leave him be.
Boy, that bump on your head must have scrambled your brains. Come on.
Why are you sticking up for me? Wasn't your fault what your pa did?
Don't you never mind what my pa did. As your pa started anyhow. Weren't for him, none of this would have happened. Just mind your own business.
Yeah, mind your own business, Andy. Feel better.
Get well soon.
Exactly. Like, did you guys get my a fruit basket? We're really sorry. Oh, so this is Jonathan is saying grace and getting ready to eat. And Jonathan, I think he's kind of famous for these type of prayers where he kind of goes off topic a little bit, where he just cannot. He always has to pray about something that he kind of shouldn't be praying about, maybe. I don't know if he shouldn't be praying. I don't know enough about prayer. But he always kind of goes very personal in his prayers, I guess.
Yeah, and I think that might be just like a TV thing, because ordinarily you'd pray like in your brain. Like he would be saying it out loud and not at grace over, you know, for dinner, talking about your personal beef with Larrabee. But that always kind of drives me crazy when people pray out loud in TV and movies. But, you know, you got to get the message across.
Yeah.
Give me, Lord, for feeling hate. Crop was the only thing we had coming for this whole year, and it's going to take me a while to get over it. Thanks for understanding, Lord. Amen.
And they have more food. They have like a Thanksgiving dinner in front of them.
Yeah, there's like creamed carrots, bread, a brand new lamp.
Let me see the lamp.
Larrabee's been yelling about not being guilty of burning that barn.
Imagine if they used the same lamp. Like it was like just a prop lamp, and it would just be very questionable at this point. I just... So whose fault is it really? I mean, is it them for using maybe too much wick and maybe putting too much soot out?
I mean, it had a death wish, that lamp, honestly. Like, that lamp was going to start a fire one way or another.
Jeez. I never thought about that. I never thought about the kind of maintenance that you might have to do with the lamps.
Yeah, because it's going to get all resiny and stuff in there. I mean, it's like the same thing with the chimney, that you have to make sure you clean it out real nice.
Hmm. It's a good, very good point. Thank you. We have an ice house scene, which it's interesting. I'll just play some of it. I think it's more of a visual. The ice house is very creepy.
Oh, yeah.
It goes like a full story down. It's like a real basement type of level thing, at least 10 feet into the ground.
And it's dark, and there's just big hunks of ice in the foreground, and there's usually a person with a shotgun standing by the door making sure you can't get out.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Time to go.
So he's coming out of the, he's coming out to just basically meet up and get this trial started, I guess, right?
Yeah, he's got to go make his plea. The circuit court is in, the circuit judge is in town, and like the whole town shows up for this.
Yeah, I think we have other towns showing up for this as well.
Yeah, it is standing room only.
It's big news, big news.
Oh, yeah.
You will remain standing, Mr. Larrabee. Barn burning, serious felony offense. How do you plead?
I never burned that barn.
It's a matter of record that you confess to it.
I thought they was talking about me accidentally pushing that boy.
Very well. Then you plead not guilty to the charge of barn burning, but guilty to the charge of assault and battery. Am I correct?
I reckon.
Reverend Alden, would you agree to act as a jury foreman?
I'd be happy to serve on the jury, Judge Parker. However, as town pastor, I feel that jury foreman is somewhat inappropriate.
Then can you...
Oh, jeez, you can't just take the job.
Yeah, I looked up the duties of a jury foreman, and I don't see in any way how that would be a conflict of interest with being the town reverend.
He's very busy eating pie that day.
Yeah, exactly. Drinking tea.
I can't really think of too many people as wonderful and trusted as Reverend Alden, though. I wonder who they would choose.
Well, yes, sir. I think Charles Ingalls would do an entirely responsible job.
Mr. Ingalls?
Yes, sir.
And he stands up. He's like, well, you know, we're going to hang him. What would have been, I wonder what would have been the real punishment here.
That is a great question. I tried to look up the punishment for it. The only thing I could find was that in the 1800s is when it stopped being like basically manslaughter, almost like attempted manslaughter, because they realized that it was really just a property crime instead of a crime against, like, in an assault and battery kind of situation. Mm-hmm. So that's the only thing that I could find out when I looked about it. But it seems like the 1800s was really the time that they made these laws into effect.
Hmm. I mean, a little town like this, you could probably get away with quite a lot.
Yeah, but there's people outside that are like, let's just string them from the nearest tree. Like, oh my gosh, these people are going in bloodthirsty.
Yeah, they really are. So we have a little bit of a moment here with Kagan, where I'm just going to play this. They're choosing the jury and the people who are going to sit on it.
Joe Kagan?
Judge! He can't name Kagan to that jury!
Will you state your reason for objecting to Mr. Kagan?
Because it's against the law to have a color on a jury, that's why.
You're objecting to his race, am I correct?
You bet I am.
Then I must inform you and the court that it has recently been declared unconstitutional to bar a member of the Negro race from sitting in judgment on a white defendant. Therefore, Mr. Byerby's objection is overruled. Take your place, Mr. King.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Now, I wonder who was the first African-American to be on a jury.
Now, that is a great question. I know that it happened in 1875.
Ooh. So we're talking like, you know, real kind of, you know, right in the exact neighborhood.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. And he even said, like, this recently happened, and it really did. They lined their stuff up this episode.
Some episodes. That's pretty good. Mm-hmm. In 1875, you said?
1875.
Do you know where?
No, I don't.
Okay. I'm just kind of curious if it was like a big city or...
Well, actually, no, I'm sorry. In 1875 is when it was constitutionally declared African Americans could sit on a trial with white defendants.
Oh, okay. It's only logical, of course, but I just have to wonder if like there was a specific... reason why it's like, all right, look, we have to turn this over now, or if it's kind of like, all right, well, it's just time to, and now they can.
I don't know, because I got into like a deep wormhole of like, when could African Americans vote, and you know, all this kind of stuff, and I saw that African American women couldn't even vote until 1965.
Is that really?
That's what I saw today. I mean, it's the internet, so take everything with a grain of salt, but that's what I saw, and so I was just shocked at that, because women couldn't even vote until 1920. So it's just, it's so crazy that to me, with how slow the wheels of justice turn, that in 1863 slavery was abolished and in 1875 African Americans are serving on juries, like it seems like that moved pretty quick, and I'm like, right on.
Yeah. I mean, you definitely saw some progress right there. But at the same time, I always questioned why it took so long for 1920 to come around and, you know, put the amendment in that women have the right to vote. I mean, it's just an insane type of thing. Like, you would hope that it would be, you know, 1620 or 1720. I mean, it wouldn't apply to the United States, but I mean, it just doesn't really kind of equate to common sense.
No, it is. Oh, trust me, it is International Women's Day, and my International Women's Day gift to you is not going on a feminist rant right now, because I could really derail this whole thing with how I feel inside, but I will not.
All right. Well, that's good. but all in all, I think women should have the right to vote as long as they're voting alongside with who their husband is voting for.
Oh, okay. That checks out.
Actually, I had a theory that's getting squashed right now is... well, maybe not. Who knows? Things do change. I always thought that there was going to, in the past couple of years, I thought that there was going to be this big push for a female to win the White House in 2020, because it would be the 100th anniversary. That celebration. Mm-hmm. It just seems kind of poetic, you know?
Yeah, no, I've actually heard you make that point before, that you've said, like, you know, they're going to try and get you to vote, you know, on the woman card, you know, 100 years since you had the right to vote.
Well, and, you know, I might kind of make jokes like that and everything, but with the right female, and the same thing with the right male, you know, I'll vote based upon somebody's actual stance. I'm not going to vote on their sex, but I do think that it would make some type of historical significance if that were to have happened. I don't see it happening, though, so it's you never know, though. There's theories abound. So all right, so he's kind of squashed again. Of course, Kagan can be on the jury, and he just has this grimace the whole time. So here we are at the trial.
And it was because you felt cheated by Mr. Larrabee that you went to confront him at his home.
Town was cheated by what he'd done.
Yet you were the only one to confront him.
I was the first. I think there would have been others, but word got around that I'd already spoken a piece. You mean him had our troubles before, Your Honor?
You were abusive to him then.
would say.
But my whole family. He tried to shame me.
I told you they shouldn't have been there.
My family's got a right to be in their own house.
We will have an orderly proceeding or none at all.
I say not at all. Just go home. Have pie.
Check, please.
So here we are. Andy's being questioned. I'm just going to pop onto that.
His manner frightened you.
It sure did. He was hollering and waving a shotgun. And...
Now, this is a very important question, Andy. When Mr. Larrabee threw you to the floor, you believe he was deliberately trying to hurt you?
You mean, was it an accident?
You feel it was?
No, sir.
Judge, can't you...
You'll have your turn, Mr. Larrabee.
He's just a stupid kid. You know, it's like, he's got the biggest bandage you've ever seen in your life on his head. You know, it's kind of like, let's blame the kid. You know,
yeah, let's go smack some sense into him.
But then, you know, as all this is going on, we get to a very strange moment where I'm just going to play. This is again in the trial. The trial goes on forever. Mm-hmm. In Little House on the Prairie world. Forever.
Another reason why you chose to break your word.
I don't understand that question.
Mr. Garvey has testified that you didn't like the idea that Mr. Kagan would make the same profit as you.
That's right.
Now, Jeff Corey has one of those whistling type of things. I don't know if you're catching it.
Oh.
When he talks, it's sometimes like, I can't make the sound. I could do it sometimes, but if you listen to him talk, sometimes he out of nowhere just has one of these like very loud whistles out of his mouth.
Interesting.
He got himself wiped out too.
In other words, for the sake of your hatred of one man, you were willing to damage the economy, the entire community.
I don't care what others want to think.
Larrabee. You care to make a statement on your own behalf?
You bet I do. Now, I might have hurt that boy, but I didn't mean it. But I never burned down no barn. I think Garvey done it himself. He even said he'd rather burn his crop than sell it at that price. And I think that's exactly what he done, and I think he's trying to blame it on me, and that's what I got to say.
And that's the end of the episode. Exactly. And, yeah, they run Jonathan out of the town. So it's a pretty bold statement. I thought this was a different thing. But, let's see. Larrabee is also doing a lot of mumbling in this episode. Let's see. He's talking to his wife. And, you know, his wife is still kind of standing by her man and...
Yeah, the jury's, like, convened, you know, the jury's going to go decide if he's guilty or innocent. And so Adele, his wife, comes to the ice house to visit Larrabee.
Waste of time. Ain't going to be no verdict. I've been mad on that jury. Rest them people are getting me, but not mad.
You're sure?
Sure, I'm sure.
After what you did?
What do you mean, after what I did? You seem to forget none of this would have happened if they hadn't have taken that nigger in like one of our own.
Ding, ding, ding. Another N-word. It's like, it really does roll off of his tongue. But...
Yeah.
Hate. That's all you know. It's hate.
Who are you talking to?
I don't know. I don't know anymore. I used to try to pretend that it wasn't important, that it's just your way. Now I look at my boys. I see the same poison filling them. Well, no more. No matter what happens in the trial. You'll not see your sons or me again.
And who's gonna stop me?
I am. Anyway, I have to. May God forgive me.
So the woman is really ballsy. And
yeah,
like kind of fearless too. I think like she's really just fed up,
and it's exactly.
So I really, really liked that scene. I think it really, we saw like a quick transformation in Adele. And is it Adele?
It is. Yeah, right, Adele. It is. And you're right. She was just fed up. She had just had enough, and like she, you know, her line was her boys, and when she started seeing her boys being hateful, she knew she kind of had to get them out of that situation.
Yeah, and I would believe that, you know, if you come around, buddy, you're gonna get some lead in you.
Oh yeah, no, that's what it sounded like to me. That was like a threat.
Yeah, like that exactly. It was kind of like, look, you can come around, but you know,
you're not gonna leave.
Yeah, exactly. So. We have a bit of a verdict. There's a lot of speeching going on.
Yeah, there's a lot of not on the up and up legal things going on.
Yeah. So here we go. By the way, there is this one little thing. It's more of a visual. Is that Andy's, you know, thinking about everything that has happened, but even with a head injury. He's chosen to drive the wagon home.
I noticed that too. And I was like, could a woman just not drive?
No, that's not true. We've seen women drive on the show.
Yeah, but never when there's a man in the car.
What?
In the cart with them. Anytime there's a man or like a boy, then he drives. I've seen Ma drive. I've seen, you know, Charlotte Stewart drive. I've seen all of them drive. But if there's like a man, then he's the one that's driving.
That's interesting. I wonder... why you would still choose the one with the head injury.
I don't know. You're going to get some crazy woman disease if you don't. That's probably the old wife's tale.
Yeah, that's how you make the horse lame.
Exactly.
But it is very, very strange where this is only maybe 3 or 4 days later. I mean, it could be more, I guess. It depends.
No, I mean, because the thing is, the barn is smoldering on the next day, and that's Wednesday, and the trial's on Thursday. So I think it happened like Tuesday night.
I mean, we're talking, you know, he really could have a concussion.
Oh, yeah. No, definitely. I mean, I think the barn still is smoldering. Yeah, this kid is not well.
Oh, crazy. He loves banging that gaffle, by the way. Yeah, and still try to listen to the judge. I don't know if he's going to do it again. I hope he makes one of these loud kind of toot whistle things. I've noticed it like about 20 times throughout the show, and I forgot to bring it up.
Not on both counts, Your Honor.
Then will you tell the court what you have accomplished?
On the charge of assault and battery. Guilty. On the charge of barn burning, we haven't been able to reach a decision.
I will tolerate no further disruptions. If the spectators cannot conduct themselves in a proper manner, I will clear this court. Is that understood? Just how far apart are you?
You suck, Judge.
11 guilty, 1 not guilty.
May I ask the identity of the dissenter?
Now, wouldn't this... you wouldn't do this, right? I mean, I've never been on a jury. I've thankfully never had to be in front of one either. But I'm pretty sure you don't have to say who is opposing.
Yeah, and I'm almost definitely sure that they don't just say, oh, since you're opposing, get up and we're going to sub you out with someone who will agree.
Oh, it's the black guy.
It's like, yeah. And he even says, like, it's because of your blackness that you can't make up your decision. He's like, it has gone to your head that you can sit in judgment of a white man, and that's why you have made this decision. And it's like, mm-hmm. Poor Joe Kagan, man.
Yeah, I mean, even what he's doing is, now, of course, this is not a historically accurate jury, but what he is doing, what the character is doing is just as ballsy as what the wife did, because you're basically really using the law and you're taking the opportunity to do the right thing, even mm-hmm. though it's not popular.
Exactly. It's totally against the mob. And like, Larrabee thinks that the one person that's holding out is his little BFF Matt. And so when he sees that it's Joe Kagan, who's like his sworn enemy, he's just like, what?
Yeah, because he even turns to him and winks. It's like, all right.
And Matt's just like mean mugging him.
Hey, Adele left, you know? We can finally be together.
Wink, wink.
Yeah.
I am, sir.
Silence. And also, Joe Kagan wears a scarf around his neck. Nobody else wears one.
It was a jaunty little ascot. I loved it.
It's pretty nice.
It's probably like a sweat thing, I would imagine, being like a farmer. But you'd think that more of them would wear it.
It's civilized, you know?
It's nice. Yeah, he looks real polished.
It brings a little bit of civility to the prairie.
Mr. Kagan is a member of the colored race. You are pretty much accepted in this community.
I also want to mention, you know, television had gone through a lot of racial tension in the 70s, mid-70s to this period. Just to put it into perspective, 1979 was the last year of Good Times. You know, so Good Times had already run its entire gamut, you know. Mm-hmm. I think it was from 74 to 79. So there weren't that many other, quote-unquote, black shows that were about race. They had all kind of dried up a bit. Mm. So it's kind of a weird thing. Like this, I feel like if this episode had been created a few years earlier, it would have had a little bit more impact in the history of television.
Interesting. You know? Yeah. I mean, Joe's speech, which I'm sure I know you'll play, is really, really powerful. And it, I mean, you know, not to sound cliche, but it's definitely lessons we could still use, you know, with the climate today.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm going to play it. I like his whole presentation. I enjoy watching him a lot, and I'm really glad, he was on the show, not for so much, but I would have still liked to see his character develop a little bit further.
I would too. I like you said, enjoyed watching him. I've actually knew him from The Cosby Show. He's on a few episodes of that. So to see him on this is kind of a trip.
But was he the dad? Was he like,
yes.
Yeah, the,
no,
not
he
Theo,
is.
I forget his name.
Martin. He is Denise's husband's dad.
Oh, okay. That might have been after I stopped watching it by that point.
Oh, it's so good. I love Martin.
Yeah, once they all moved back into the house, I kind of I'm like, what am I watching at this point?
Yeah, shark jumpage. For sure.
That's okay. But here we go.
As much as can be expected, I think I am, sir. Well, in my experience, he's certainly the first Negro to sit in judgment on a white man. Perhaps it's all gone to your head and impaired your powers of reason. Oh, Your Honor, I take no pleasure in going against the opinions of these good people.
Perhaps you can tell the court exactly why you've chosen to do so.
Your Honor, I can't deny that in all likelihood, Mr. Larrabee probably did set that fire. I can't deny there's a powerful cause to suspect him of it. But the fact I can't get away from is nobody saw him do it.
Mr. Kagan, In your opinion, do you see any possibility of your being persuaded away from your verdict?
No, Your Honor. Not unless somebody shows up and say they saw him do it.
Then you present this court with a very difficult problem, the solution of which is left for me to solve. I therefore will do the only reasonable thing and the only sensible thing under the circumstances. And dismiss Mr. Kagan.
Are you hearing the whistling in his mouth? I mean,
I'm
his
really
voice?
Not.
Oh, okay. Oh.
Sorry.
It's like toot, 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 toot. All right.
From the jury and appoint another member of the community. You may take your place among the spectators, Mr. Kagan.
All right. But not before I had my say.
You had your say. You had more say.
No, sir.
I will have you forcibly removed from this court if you do not step down immediately.
And that's what you'll have to do, because I'm going to speak my piece.
Your Honor. Can't hurt anything, can it?
Isn't Reverend Alden completely out of order?
I mean, you know who would be in order maybe to say something like that? A jury foreman.
Yeah, right. Where the heck is he?
In deference to you, Reverend, I shall agree with this. But I don't want you wasting any more time unnecessarily.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Larrabee over there, I ain't got no use for him or his kind. You all know what he did to this town, to the Garvey boy. Wouldn't matter to me if him and others like him fell off the face of the earth tomorrow. The world would be a better place, that's for sure. But they ain't up to me. I got to live my life the best way I can, knowing that the Larrabees of this world are looking at me and my kind with hatred in their hearts. I can't change that. But I got to believe in the law. And I got to believe in justice. And I got to believe that it applies to each and every one of us, including Mr. Larrabee. Maybe I think about things different from most folks. Because I guess maybe I am different. For less reason than you'd convict a man for burning a bond and nobody saw him burn, I've seen my people with ropes around their necks hanging dead. And that's what makes me different. Because I can't erase those pictures from my brain. I know what can happen when justice disappears. And I will bring harm to no man when his guilt ain't been proved in my eyes.
Kagan may take her place among the spectators.
So let's just swap him out with this white guy.
Right, exactly. Who's going to vote guilty?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty easy. But yeah, I think for him to make that type of statement and to stand his ground was pretty interesting.
Yeah, and it was a powerful scene. And you have Katie Lester, Hester Sue, crying some real tears in that scene. And he kind of goes over and places his hand on her shoulder. And it's really moving stuff.
Yeah, this is a very visual episode as well. Like, I mean, you hear a lot of dead air and, this stuff. But it is a very powerful episode. There's no humor in this episode. This is not the episode I would recommend for somebody to watch for their first Little House on the Prairie.
If this was the first episode I had seen of Little House on the Prairie, I don't think I would want to keep watching Little House on the Prairie. It is so dark and just like I said earlier, like just filled with hatred.
Yeah. And it's just joyless. You know, it really is.
Exactly.
And it's even with Patrick Labyrinth, it's joyless.
That one felt pointed.
Yeah, it's very joyless. So we have let's see. They're about to just basically sentence him. They're going to, you know, let's get down to brass tacks. You know, it's kind of like we all have to go and sell our wheat for, well, actually now they'll get a good price for the wheat, right? No, because he still made the sale. So Andy kind of just comes in out of nowhere. It's like, who let this kid in? You know, it's like, don't listen to him. He has a concussion, but here he is.
Since we already have 11 guilty verdicts, it would save time and trouble if you simply announced what yours is. And
because that's legal.
I know.
The bottom line is this. It's all up to you.
Exactly. And just say it right now. Like, don't really talk about it. Oh, I don't care if you weren't paying attention during the trial. Like, what do you say?
Well, I think my Irishness. No. It's like, oh, geez, part two next week. No, so it's... You know, and it's like, all right, or we could swap you out again.
Yeah, until we get the answer we want.
Yeah, it's. I feel like that's how the government can be sometimes.
I feel like this judge has like a squash tournament or something that he has got to get to. He says a few times, like, let's get this show on the road here.
Yeah. You know, if you look at his resume, it's really impressive. He's done everything. Right, he even did Whiz Kids with Matthew Labyrinth.
Oh.
One episode. But he's one of these guys who he must have played a lawyer or a judge 500 times.
Yeah.
He really has been doing it like for a very long time. But here we go. Here's sentence coming down.
Perhaps we can conclude these proceedings.
No. Please, you can't. Please, Judge, there's something I didn't tell you. I'm sorry. I thought I was doing the right thing.
Young man, anything you have to say must be considered irrelevant. Unless you lied in your testimony.
No, sir, I didn't lie. Mr. Larrabee, he could have set the fire. I'm not saying that he couldn't have come back and done it.
Well, then what are you saying?
Could have been me too. It was dark that night. It was so dark, I couldn't even see my way to get to the corral. So I took a lantern out with me and I hung it up on the fence while I got my horse ready. The wind was blowing something fearful too.
I didn't really see him hanging on anything. He put it on top of the stump. And
there wasn't a single wisp of wind.
A liar.
Yeah.
You filthy liar.
I wanted to get to my folks so bad, I just forgot about it.
By the way, this was the second time their barn burned down.
Yeah.
They have a lot of fire issues.
Yeah, Alice.
Yeah. I don't know. I have to say that it could be a curse.
I think fire could be like the third build on this entire cast. I mean, the amount of times fire happens in Little House on the Prairie, and I know that's just how stuff was back in the 1800s. I mean, stuff was flammable, and then you carried around like a torch with you everywhere you went with, you know, oil attached to it. So
it's funny you mention that because I did reach out to Fire, and Fire is actually going to be interviewed
really?
In a couple of weeks. Yeah. Well, the fire at the blind school, anyway.
Oh, wow. But well, actually, congratulations.
Yeah. But yeah, it's not the same fire that they use for this episode, but, you know,
Hollywood.
Still fire. Here we go.
Wind could have blown off the fence.
Judge, that's the way it must have happened.
Did you ever find the lantern?
Still laying there in the ashes. I wanted to be sure he was punished for what he did to me and my folks. And the whole town.
Now, I'm conflicted here. Because I don't know if I would have been able to make the right decision as a child. He's probably about 12, right? 13, maybe?
Yeah, he's 13.
I don't know. I mean, I don't... I mean, this guy is a real, real jerk, you know?
Yeah. No, I know for sure as a 13-year-old that I would have let him go to jail. Like, yeah. I would not have stood up and said the truth. My thing was like, oh, I will commit to this lie as a 13-year-old for the rest of my life, you know?
And write a book about it when I'm older. And he's,
yeah, you know, but get it off my chest.
Yeah, I think it would have been one of those like quiet revenge type of things.
Yeah.
Which we don't get nearly enough in life.
Especially as a kid.
Yeah.
I mean, you have no power. So the power to send this bad guy who was coming after your pa with a shotgun and who kind of roughed you up a little bit.
Right. You kind of, yeah, deserves
it. I mean, there's still the slightest possibility that Larrabee burned the barn. We don't know. We can't account for Larrabee's hours during that time. But that's, I mean, true. It was more than likely Andy's fault. But I would not have come forward, I don't think, as a 13-year-old.
I think it was Larrabee.
Okay.
So the judge who is in this, I do want to mention that he was, like we mentioned before, he was also in the episode Blind Justice, but he was the accused. He was on trial for swindling the townsfolk.
Ooh, okay, cool.
That's kind of fun for a fake land deal.
Yeah, and now he's on the other side of the law.
Yes. All right, here we go with the rest of this.
Yeah. I mean,
speak up, boy.
Not whatever Mr. Kagan said.
Take your seat, son.
He didn't really have a seat, did he?
Will the defendant please rise? Judd Larrabee, you've been found guilty of assault and battery. As for the charge of barn burning, some reasonable doubt exists as to its validity, and you will receive the benefit of that doubt.
Thank you.
I could easily send you to prison for a very long time.
Well, so there, it would be prison. Mm. At least in, you know, on NBC.
That would serve no useful purpose to this community, which you owe so much. I therefore sentence you to pay Jonathan Garvey an amount equal to his destroyed crop had he sold it at the original agreed-on price.
Now, this is strange.
I have so many issues with this ruling. Okay.
Yeah, right.
It's so bananas crazy. Okay. A, if he's not guilty of the charge of barn burning, then why should he have to pay for Garvey's wheat?
Right.
Makes no sense. B, if we're just going to kind of like go along with that, he should have paid the price of the wheat. Why did he only have to pay Garvey's wheat? Why didn't he have to pay everybody in the town's wheat?
Right.
And then C, why is he not paying Andy's doctor bill? That's the only charge that he was found guilty of.
He's fine. That's what Doc says.
Yeah, walk it up. Yeah, you're right. He did say no big deal. But
here's some powder.
God.
You mix it with water if you have a little bit of pain.
And keep it away from Albert.
Or not. That's where Albert is. He found the glassine envelope.
That's just a bonkers ruling.
It's almost like, and you have to do their laundry for 2 years.
Exactly. There's a television show called An Eye for an Eye, which is like Judge Judy, but they make them do stuff like that.
That's ridiculous.
So it's like, oh, well, you know, you trashed your landlord's place, so now you have to clean his house for 6 months. Like, it's ridiculous.
Is that a real show?
Yeah, it's a real show. I don't know how, like, real it is, but it's definitely a real show.
It's like that tattoo show you watch.
Oh, my God. How far is tattoo far? Oh, it is just pure garbage, and I love it.
Those can't be real, by the way. There's no way.
I don't know.
Here we go.
Judge, that ain't fair.
I would advise you not to use the word fair. I sentence my change. Now, you wish to announce any more objections?
No. So he has, all right, the end of the episode is one of those kind of things where we've seen this kind of movie, right? Where the racist guy is kind of turned around at the end.
Right.
And all of a sudden he's like, I understand now. And I'm so sorry. And
I have a heart of gold.
Right. And it's like, you know, let's go drink some whiskey together.
Mm-hmm.
It ends almost exactly like that, but not at all. They're all walking out of the court, the schoolhouse, the church. And I'm going to just assume that the American flag is correct for this.
Yeah, right? I couldn't get a good look at the stars.
Yeah, we're just assuming at this point.
Okay.
They're all moseying on out slowly.
Just Adele is
like, this was fun. You know, getting egg cream at the mercantile. and finally, his wife gets to the end. Because, you know, you would imagine these two have a lot to talk about, right?
Yeah, apparently they're divorced now.
Yeah.
I didn't need no nigger defending me.
And it's a visual, but she just kind of walks away like you are, like, the saddest, pathetic old man ever.
Yeah.
And he just is left there alone. And that's how this hilarious episode ends.
He's like just screaming, I didn't need nobody, you hear? I didn't need nobody.
Literally. Yeah, I might have zoned out at that point.
Well, I didn't need nobody! You understand? I didn't need nobody!
Double negative.
Do-do-do-do. Like, it's that quick into the ending, and you're just left like depressed. Like, this is so harrowing that he is literally clinging to his hatred. That's all that he has left, and he's just like, I don't need nobody.
Yeah. And I do want to remind everyone that this was the February 19th episode, so this was right after right after Valentine's Day.
Oh, and right? What better episode?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very dark episode. It's very,
yeah.
I don't know. It's just a very, it leaves you wanting to take a break from Little House, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. And I think you said it perfectly earlier. It's just, it's joyless.
Yeah. And even there's even fire, you know, but there's no deaths. Right? Mm-hmm.
No deaths.
Maybe animals, but we don't, of course, learn about the animals.
Well, they had like three horses out of the barn. Thank goodness. I mean, mm-hmm. Maybe that's why they showed all the horses out.
Yeah. You know, I read somewhere that somebody said that they show a scene with the little house that's supposed to be very creepy.
I saw that too. They said you could see like a boy's face.
And it's disturbing. I have no idea what they're talking about.
I looked really hard. I think maybe their screen was dark and they saw their own face reflecting back.
I think that they thought that the barn was the little house, because I don't even recall there being a shot of the little house. Do you?
There's a shot at nighttime. Yeah. When the Garveys are over and they're all kind of like BSing about how it all went down with Larrabee. There's a shot of the outside of the little house at nighttime. I didn't see any boy's face.
I just think it's one of those silly things that unfortunately is just stupid. It's silly.
Well, one of three people found it helpful on IMDb, so.
Yeah. But well, Kim, thank you very much for getting together for this very grim episode.
Oh my god.
We have to choose a very happy and cheerful one next time.
Yes, Legend of Black Jake. Here we go, round two.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider supporting One Up Grovecast by heading over to patreon.com/OneUpGrovecast. Any support is appreciated.